Representative Martin, if I can ask Ms. Newman to work on that a little bit, and we will leave that amendment on the table here and bring it up a little later towards the end when we get the wording a little bit clearer. But we should probably discuss your bill. Your bill is the only bill today. I'd like to hear a little bit about what the U of M partnership is doing, U of M Mayo partnership is doing, and then here to have the bill presented. And we might be able to get out of here and get to lunch a little early and actually get a decent, more than 30 minutes for lunch today. So with that having said, why don't you present your bill?
I will. Kind of to lay the groundwork, back in 2003, a commission was formed to study the issue and the economic impact of this type of a partnership. We had a plan that laid out 5 years of funding, and the amount that was designated was $70 million over 5 years. And the economic impact, which I don't know if we have handouts for you, but I certainly have them, and these gentlemen will share the gains that have been made so far and the economic impact to date, but knowing that the results of the study were looking at it 210, 215, and 220, so it was a long-term study. My bill is just to appropriate the next two out of the next three phases of $15 million so that we could get to that $70 million over the 5 years, and I'm going to let them explain the funding, what they've done with it, and the really exciting things happening through this partnership. I have Dr. Paller, and I believe you have this information, Dr. Mark Paller, who's the Assistant Vice President of Research for the University of Minnesota, and Dr. Eric Wieben, who is the Director of Advanced Genomics Center at Mayo Clinic. And then I do believe we have a couple people that would like to testify for and against at the end of our presentation.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, I want to start by thanking you for inviting us to come here today, and thank you for your support of previous funding for partnership activities, and note that the partnership has succeeded in the early years of its life, primarily because there has been strong bipartisan support in recognition of the fact that the partnership was formed to really do two different things for the state of Minnesota, and those are encapsulated in this brief opening slide. And the idea here is that really the partnership has two goals, and the first is to improve life. So we stand at a time of unprecedented opportunity in the application of new scientific techniques to improving healthcare. And the partnership is focused on speeding the application of this science to the practice of medicine. The second goal is to stimulate Minnesota's economy, and this is in recognition of the fact that the biosciences are a strong economic engine as well. You heard a little bit about this when the University of Minnesota was here at a recent session. And I think they highlighted a number of the economic benefits that are possible within the biosciences if we can get a little extra support from the state. And really the Minnesota partnership that brings together Mayo and the University of Minnesota is an extension of that type of work that really brings together two research powerhouses and Minnesota leaders to really try and advance the science and promote economic development within the state. As Representative Norton noted in her introductory comments, the partnership became a reality in 2003 after some discussions between the two organizations along with people from the government. In recognition of the fact that there is a lot of competition around the country and around the world for bioscience development, so there's a limited window of opportunity. And both Mayo and the University of Minnesota have come to understand that we are stronger working together in this environment than we are working separately and in competition. And so neither of us really could meet this big challenge alone, but working together, we think we have tremendous opportunity in this regard. And that builds upon the health and research strengths of these two institutions that, with some support from the state, really has great potential. Oops, let me back up one. And that builds upon previous investments from the two institutions that by a conservative estimate, we feel exceeds $800 million that brings us to the starting gate for this partnership. And back in 2003, that was the estimate of how much the two institutions had really put into developing bioscience activity. But nevertheless, with substantial investments by other states and other countries around the world, we felt that with a little additional support to help provide a springboard for further development, we could do a lot more and really catapult Minnesota to more of a leadership position. And, of course, the last thing here is that we've not only put dollars into this effort, but there's collective experience of more than 50 years in the bioscience industry, and most particularly within the medical device field that I think you're all familiar with. But we now have growing strengths in other areas. And importantly, those growing strengths are not identical to two institutions. So this slide is presented as two halves of a puzzle piece making a whole. And on this first part of it, you're looking at some of the strengths that the Mayo Clinic is bringing to the partnership that helps support a leadership position for this state in the biosciences, and particularly within the areas of biotechnology and medical genomics. And I won't go through this in complete detail, but I would like to point out that, for example, Mayo has particular leadership in this area of pharmacogenomics, trying to understand how individual genetic differences can affect our responses to properly prescribed drugs. And that Mayo is also putting in more than $6 million to help educate physicians in how to apply the new science to the practice of medicine. So again, we're trying to cover the whole gamut from basic research to applied research to actual care of the patient. And we also have a number of other strengths. Of course, the University of Minnesota has a number of unique strengths, and I'll let Dr. Paller continue to talk about those.
Thank you, Dr. Paller. Welcome to the committee, and if you'd identify yourself for the recorded tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to do that, although Representative Norton did introduce us. I wanted to make it clear that I'm Mark Paller, and this is Eric Weben to my left. I am the Assistant Vice President for Research at the University of Minnesota, and I'm the co-director of the partnership along with my partner, Eric Weben. On the other half of the puzzle are a number of strengths at the University of Minnesota, which include a number of core facilities for genomics, our Stump Cell Institute, our magnetic resonance imaging for neuroimaging, which you'll hear more about, Center for Drug Design, our program in bioethics, and a number of other programs. So again, combining our joint institutions really makes us the number seventh largest research institution in the country with regard to health sciences, whereas alone the university is number 21 and the Mayo Clinic is in the is 30-something. So again, taking advantage of our strengths really puts Minnesota in a very positive competitive position with regard to other institutions in the country. When we started out the partnership, we set out to perform collaborative research that would have as its single goal improvement of health, to advance treatments for common diseases and illnesses, to enhance the shared technologies that we have so that we would both have access to cutting-edge technology, to recruit top scientists to Minnesota, and then, of course, to speed these discoveries on their way to our patients. We, with regards to our role in economic development, we have as our goals contributing to increasing National Institutes of Health funding to state institutions, creating quality jobs. The jobs that are involved in biomedical research are high-paying and high education jobs, to expand the tax base, to develop new businesses in Minnesota, and not unimportant, to elevate Minnesota's stature as a destination for healthcare based on the prominence of our work. We've already made a number of critical investments in the partnership. What we're calling phase one was really our pilot phase, and so it was before the $70 million concept. The state funded $2 million, and the university and Mayo each contributed an additional $1 million. So we had $4 million to fund some pilot research, and we'll talk about that in a second. As you well know, the second phase included a $21.7 million bonding for the Stabile Building addition in Rochester. And last Friday, we had the opening, the official opening of that building. It's an exquisite facility for research that will be used by scientists, predominantly from the Mayo Clinic, but also visiting researchers from the university. In addition, in 2005, we received $15 million in appropriations for research projects. And then last year, we were able to come back on the off year and received the second $15 million. And those awards will be announced hopefully in a week or two. To give you a feel for what we invested that first full $15 million in, we funded a number of research teams to work on specific research projects that couldn't be done at either individual institution alone. These involve research in brain tumors, neuromuscular disease, tuberculosis, development of cancer drugs, autoimmune diseases, cardiovascular diseases, pancreatic cancer, transplant rejection, and drug addiction.
Dr. Pallett, before you proceed,
sure.
I'm sensing a little angst around the table as we're trying to follow along in these printed notes. Folks, apparently these do not match what we're seeing on the screen, so you may want to use these for notes and follow with the doctor. It might be a little more less confusing.
I'm sorry, I apologize.
Representative Norton.
The slide presentation was handed out at the last meeting.
Okay.
And so perhaps everyone did not have that, and we did not resubmit it again this week. I apologize for that.
You're back. Okay. Well, I just wanted to make sure. We're trying to listen and read at the same time, and it's not lining up, and I know we want to follow what you're saying here and give it our undivided attention.
Well, perhaps I can take my professorial stance and say, all right, everybody, just pay attention to what I say and don't look at the slides.
That would be very helpful. Thank you.
And I do apologize. In our zeal for continuous quality improvement, last week we continued to update our slides. This is current as of this morning.
I sense we were getting the new and improved version. Okay, members, do we have the colored slides from last time? Did we save those? Representative Norton is holding up the sample there, if you'd like. Your save folder, yeah. Hopefully staff didn't recycle them.
We will get you copies of this latest updated version.
We can revert to classroom status, and we'll just listen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Proceed.
So, members of the committee and temporary class, if you would look at the right side of this slide, we've also invested in a large number of infrastructure projects, which include equipment for genetics and genomics, equipment for proteomics, some development of technology for bioinformatics. There's a typo here. X-ray crystallography should be a separate line. We've invested in some equipment to perform X-ray crystallography, which is a way of looking at structure of proteins, and we're using this for design of new drugs, particularly our drugs to fight Alzheimer's and our drugs to fight cancer. And we've also updated a facility on the St. Paul campus so that we can produce therapeutic proteins for early phase clinical trials.
As Dr. Pallett mentioned, the other part of this, in addition to funding research grants and some new initiatives that we'll talk about in a minute, one of the signal things for partnership development in a physical sense has been the bonding bill from a couple years ago that provided $21.7 million to help create new research space on the Mayo campus that would be dedicated to partnership activities. And as Dr. Pallett mentioned, that has now gone from concept to reality, and the dedication for that space was last Friday. And it really is a great facility that is allowing us to expand our shared resources that make the latest high-tech equipment available to investigators on both campuses. It's optimizing our interactions between the investigators at both institutions. And we're beginning to use that as a recruitment point to attract new researchers and investors who are interested in partnership activities. In terms of what else is the partnership doing besides funding research, we think that we've had a very important impact around the state and around the country, in fact. We have become a nationally recognized model of innovative collaboration. So personally, I've been asked to speak to groups from North Carolina and California about the model of collaboration that we've developed here in Minnesota, and that's something that hadn't happened before in my experience. Together, we've opened a joint office of business development here in the University of Minnesota campus to try to fulfill our mandate to really try and move the science into the technology sector and into the business sector and really take this to the point where we can be creating new economic development based on partnership activities. The University of Mayo, Mayo collaborations really have expanded dramatically. So for the first round of applications, we were only able to fund four projects. Every time we go looking and soliciting the community for new applications and support of partnership activities, we get a very large response from our best investigators, and we see things like departments from Mayo and the University of Minnesota having joint retreats together now to talk more about how to collaborate, not necessarily with partnership funding, but spurred by the fact that there really are closer relationships between the two organizations. We've also developed a nice working relationship with the BioBusiness Alliance of Minnesota. We've had joint talks with IBM. The Hormel Institute has been involved because that's another University of Minnesota site, and we actually have a grant now that is held jointly by a Mayo investigator with an investigator from Hormel as a representative of the University of Minnesota. And we've talked to bioscience groups around the state and tried to build relationships with them so that we can all be pulling together to further develop Minnesota's bioscience capabilities. There was at least one jointly sponsored clinical research conference up here at the U, and that was a great success. And again, it's presenting a common front that we really are working together meaningfully in many different ways. And again, we've had national recognitions from science and business sectors, and in fact, the president of the American Association of Medical Colleges mentioned the partnership favorably in his keynote address a few years ago as an example of how private and public institutions need to collaborate to work more smoothly together.
I'd like to just update you on some of our important outcomes so far. So, again, our initial pilot funding was $4 million, and we funded four projects in Alzheimer's disease, prostate cancer, cardiovascular disease, and
obesity,
thank you. So far, we've had 44 publications that have resulted from these grants. We've filed three patent applications and have had one formal licensing application filed. We recently received an NIH grant for $7.9 million to fund our imaging center that is a collaborative effort between the two institutions. So we've already more than paid back our initial investment. And this is just the beginning. This $8 million grant will allow us to be highly competitive for additional research and to perform very highly advanced research in the area of neurologic diseases because of our ability to enhance our imaging facilities. We will continue to be able to fund these kinds of exemplary research projects with additional funding.
Of course, Minnesota isn't the only state that's recognized that there's economic potential in the biosciences and scientific potential. Each one of these yellow dots on this slide represents a state where there's a pretty significant effort in the biosciences, and this just highlights three states where there's been particular state initiatives to help fund the biosciences. Over on the right, we've got Florida, which has a $510 million initiative to bring a Scripps clinic to the East Coast to parallel the one that's already present in California on the West Coast. Up on top, we've got a Wisconsin initiative to try to fund $750 million of facilities and other activity in the biosciences. And, of course, one of the big winners in that regard for state funding was the California $3 billion stem cell initiative. But not to be lost in the mix is an announcement from Texas that's particularly relevant in this context, because it was Mark Udoff, announcing on behalf of the Texas University System that they want to create a $2.5 billion initiative to stimulate activity within the biosciences.
So basically the legislation that's been proposed by Representative Norton is a commitment to the partnership for continuing our ability to do outstanding work. We're seeking a recurring commitment of $15 million a year. This money would be used for additional research projects, to continue to invest in research infrastructure, new equipment, to commercialize these discoveries and make sure that they get transferred to local companies and then become available to our patients. And importantly, the latest phase of activities that we've been involved in is recruiting additional high-profile faculty to work at the two institutions to enhance those areas where we are highly competitive or will be highly competitive but need a little more expertise. So what would be next for Minnesota would be top-level science. We have world-class potential. We currently have momentum and certainly have the interest and the ability to do it. And the real question is, where does Minnesota want to go in the future?
And this just brings us back where we started, again, that we've got fairly lofty goals, but as Dr. Paller mentioned, we do have some momentum now. We are making an impact. We're still very early on a scientific timescale for being able to move a lot of the activities that have been funded with partnership support into the marketplace. But importantly, we have made an investment this year of $1 million in commercialization activities for some of the findings that came out of the initial prostate project. So that project identified new molecular markers for particularly aggressive prostate cancer. And there was interest from some companies in licensing that information, but we felt the value would be greatly enhanced with a little bit more development. And we're starting to put some dollars into that, as we promised initially, into commercialization activities to try to enhance the economic value back to the state. So that's just an example of the type of thing that we think will be continuing to grow as the partnership continues to mature. And we have developed some momentum, and we'd really appreciate your support moving forward. The last thing here is the URL for partnership activity. I have my students tell me that you can't be real unless you have a website. We do have a website. It contains a lot of information about the partnership, including the complete economic impact analysis that was done a few years ago to project the economic benefits of the partnership. And with that, I think we're done with our formal remarks, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Pepin?
Thank you, Chair Mahoney, and guest Representative Norton, perhaps this is a question for you. My question is in regard to the language of the bill, lines 1.11 to 1.12. I'm just curious exactly what this means. The annual appropriation shall become a part of the agency's base and shall be available until expended. So I guess legally what would happen if there were some kind of a budget situation where the money wasn't available would be kind of the first question. And the second question is, what does available until expended exactly mean?
Representative Pepin, I believe what we're talking about is the money is set aside for this purpose, and if it isn't spent, it continues to stay with the project until the next year. It is not taken back at the end of the year. So I think it's appropriated and maintains with the partnership. Dr. Paller or Dr. Weaver?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pepin, if I can expand on that. With the initial $2 million from the state, we didn't have any specific language. It took a year for DEED to develop a contract to get the money to the university, and then we had to spend the money by the end of the biennium. By the time we were able to award the money, the 2 years was almost over. And so with the beginning of the first $15 million installment, it was recommended that the money be appropriated and be that the university could hold it until it's spent. And basically, the purpose of that is some of these research projects can't be finished in 1 or 2 years, and they may carry over to 2.5 years.
Okay, so this is only an appropriation for the $15 million in 08 and $15 million for 09. That's the extent of it?
Representative Peppin, yes, Representative Mahoney. This is $15 million for the 08 and 09 fiscal years, and this will be year 3 and year 4 that we're talking about. In my way of thinking of the initial 5 years, $70 million over 5 years, this is year 3 and year 4.
No, Representative Norton, if I may interject.
Mm-hmm.
No, your bill is an ongoing funding, becomes part of the base, and it will be $15 million a year until some future legislature says yes to more money or no to any money whatsoever. So it would be a $15 million base budget appropriation every year ongoing.
Okay, thank you. That's what I was getting at.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm glad that you wrote the bill this way, by the way.
Okay, my intent was to come back. And I believe
you're always welcome here.
Thank you. And part of the bill does stipulate that there will be an annual report, and I think this committee and if this committee no longer exists, other committees need to review that information and make sure that we are spending money and it is being used in a way we would like it to.
Representative Hahn.
Questions on finance is probably going to be debated further in the higher ed.
I
and finance and probably does not have to be debated at this level. But tell me why, with all the needs in education, that you wish to tie this $15 million down every year as a have to rather than have it work its way through a priority evaluation.
Representative Haas, Representative Mahoney. Number one, this, again, it was $70 million over 5 years, was kind of the outline of where this project was to go, what the partnership was to do. And I believe in this type of research, it becomes very difficult to have to come back each year not knowing whether you have ongoing funding. And so I think this is to give some sense of obligation to the $70 million proposal originally and say you can count on for the next 2 years this money, knowing full well that there is an annual reporting and the legislature certainly in the end has the ultimate control.
Not being, Mr. Chair, not being able to be in the head of the governor, then why would the governor, if he admits to the importance of this, why would he put it as a one-time funding source and tell you that it's going to be 70 into the future? What's the line of reasoning with that? Can anybody in the committee or staff help me with that?
Representative Haas, I can't speak to the governor's thinking. I can tell you that the $70 million was not necessarily a governor's decision. That came out of a study, an economic impact study that was done for the partnership back in 2003. And I do believe that the governor's proposal in his mind does fulfill the obligation of the $70 million. My proposal is smaller increments ongoing with annual review. So I do believe there is a difference in philosophy, perhaps, to that. And I don't know if Dr. Weaven or Dr. Powler have any insights. You're welcome to address.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hall, I don't have any particular insights into the governor's thinking. I did speak with him on Friday, and he did suggest that he thought, based on the outcomes we've had so far, that the project certainly merits ongoing funding, and asked us to actually come up with a bigger and bolder proposal for future years. Having said that, it is what it is.
Yes, and I've always looked at it as the governor gets to propose and we actually get to pass.
Thank you. I just wanted some debate or comment.
Yeah. Did you?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. I think the other sort of bit of history there, that again, when the partnership was first proposed, we were at a time within the state where there was a projected $4 billion deficit. and that was part of the contributing factor to why the initial appropriation was only $2 million. And at that time, the question that was being proposed is how much would it take to really get this partnership between these two institutions off the ground and make it a real force within the bioscience community nationally. And that figure was the $70 million, and that came after some study. And I think our successful record to this point has now led us to start to conceive of the bigger question, which is what does it take to sustain this and to continue our trajectory towards making Minnesota a real leader within the bioscience world, both in terms of applications to healthcare and in terms of economic development. And that's where our request for more sustained continuing funding would help us meet those goals without having to have the prospect of recruiting people and then having no funding for subsequent years.
Representative Bunn?
Chair and presenters, first I have a clarification question, and I'm not sure who's appropriate to answer it. The issue of understanding the differences between what the governor has proposed and what is being proposed here. What you're proposing is $15 million a year over the next two-year biennium, which is only $30 million, whereas the governor has proposed $38 million up front in the first year of that biennium. In terms of reaching toward year 70, if that's what we're talking about, an economist would always like more money up front. So, I mean, I find the governor's proposal a little more attractive in that regard. So I assume that what you're proposing assumes that this will be ongoing, either a $15 million level or some other level you're going to come back and request. And if that is the case, first of all, regarding Chair Mahoney, your comment, I assume from the language here, since it says it's $15 million for 08, $15 million for 09, that they would have to come back and request it again to get another $15 million or whatever the amount might be in the future. But your comment seems to suggest to me it would be on autopilot somehow. Can you clarify that?
Certainly I can. You know, I should bring reading glasses so I don't have to put it farther back. In the bill, this on line 1.11, mm-hmm. where it starts with biotech, after the first period it says the annual appropriation shall become a part of the agency's base and shall be available until expended. When a bill, a budget bill, puts in there the line shall become part of the agency's base, it then becomes an ongoing funding as that's the starting point mm-hmm. for now until a future legislature says we are going to not fund that again and take it out of the base. So there would have to be a bill coming through the process that says that this $15 million is no longer appropriated.
So you're, let me just make sure I understand. So you're saying in 2010 and 11,
$15 million
would automatically be there. Representative Norton or anyone else would not have to come back and re-request this fund.
I would phrase it that the U of M Rochester Mayo partnership would have a substantial, a sustainable budgeting process to for their ongoing research and development. So, but yes, okay. That would be correct. They would have their $15 million every year until okay. whether it's a, you know, 3 or 4 years from now or 30 or 40 years from now.
Well, I guess understanding, having had that clarification, I would just, reflecting, I think, a little bit of Representative Haas's concerns, is that we're now no longer talking about, you know, $70 million for a start, you know, to provide the foundations for starting this initiative. We're now talking about ongoing, and that may be perfectly justified and warranted and from based on what we heard, but mm-hmm. as Representative Haas mentioned, we have a lot of demands across a lot of areas, including within the higher ed area, and we need to be sensitive to rate of returns for those, from those various investments and comparative mm-hmm. ones. And I'm a little bit uncomfortable with, you know, not having rate of return information from a variety of different projects to put this particular one on autopilot, and I would love to hear Representative Norton or the other presenters comment on that, or if other committee members would like to hold a discussion in relation to that.
Yeah. Representative Norton or doctors?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'll take a stab at that. Again, the major difficulty that we've had is that we've really not been able to deliver what we initially projection we could, because we have not had a reliable funding stream. So again, going back to the last biennium, which isn't that long ago, we were only funded for 1 year out of two, and we were left hanging there. And we're very fortunate. We got $50 million in the first year of the biennium. We're grateful, and we've invested that money wisely, so we're thankful. We came back last year, and until the last 20 minutes of the conference committee, it wasn't clear whether we were going to get another penny. And so up until that point in time then, we were actually on hold. We could not entertain new research projects. We certainly couldn't do the next step, which is even more important, I think, which is to solidify this partnership, is to hire some of these outstanding faculty who will be here in perpetuity, or at least for a long period of time, to continue the work of the partnership. And so we couldn't do that without knowing that, you know, yes, if we thought the business plan was to have $15 million next year, that it would really be there. So that's what we're reacting to. We certainly welcome the opportunity to come back every year and to present reports. We have been submitting our reports as stipulated to the various committees and to the Commissioner of Deed and Finance. So we don't have any problem with meeting with you and making sure that we're meeting our goals and that the rate of return, the ROI, is appropriate. But that's the dilemma here, that if we're really going to compete with these other institutions elsewhere in the country, they know that they've got a long-range plan, and we really hadn't, even though several years ago, for example, the Senate passed a bill authorizing about $75 million, 75, not 70, for the partnership. There was no money with that except for the 1 year of the appropriation. And so we really haven't been able to do anything long range. And we'd like to be able to deliver on the promise by having some long range capabilities.
Mr. Chairman, if I can add just a few comments on that.
Briefly, because we've got a lot of questions, and I think there's some other testimony.
Okay. You're asking for information about a rate of return, and I would just like to cite three returns that we've had from other sources, largely in response to the initial $2 million appropriation. So as Dr. Paller mentioned in his remarks, that one of those projects funded with that initial $2 million appropriation was a project in Alzheimer's. And that is a project that has now successfully competed for an $8 million NIH grant based upon that initial work. So there's a fourfold return right there. In addition to that, we've had success in getting some additional donations as a part of bringing the two institutions together. The primary example there was a $12 million gift from Sam Johnson of Johnson Wax, who happens in Spokane, Wisconsin. Upon hearing that the partnership would allow his dollars to go a little bit farther. And we have a $5 million pledge from Medica. So based on the fact that the only projects that have actually been completed so far from that initial $2 million, I think we're beginning to build the type of momentum, and those are just a few examples of the types of returns we're having, but it's certainly not a detailed response to your question.
Who represent, is this a further follow-up or to a different point? Representative Bunn?
Chair Mahoney, guests. I guess the issue really is, because in terms of the next 2 years, the governor's actually set you up better than that this proposal does in terms of being assured of amount of money. Is the crux of this really is the argument for ongoing versus just a $70 million investment. And I guess in that regard, the issue of these other states you pointed to with the various up to several billion dollars investments, and then are they structuring their initiatives in those states around providing ongoing funding and not just startup funding?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bunn, it's my understanding that the way that these programs in other states are being funded vary as all other funding streams for various programs vary across the states. California initiative was set up for $3 billion, and that will be, I believe, it's either a 10 or a 20-year program to fund stem cell research there. So that one did have a long horizon. the Scripps Florida initiative that I mentioned on the slide, again, I'm not sure when the sunset on that is, but that's, again, it's a long-term investment that will have at least a 5 or 10 year horizon on that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not familiar with enough with the details of what's going on in Wisconsin to be able to do that, but in states such as Arizona and others, again, the trend has been more towards setting up things that will have a little bit longer life than just year-by-year funding.
Representative Beard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Although, now that we've gone this far into the discussion, we've got about 6 points to touch on, so I'm going to kind of restrain myself to just a couple of them.
That would be appreciated.
Yeah, thank you. I thought so, but maybe I should just have Joanne put me back on the list again already. First of all, just an overarching comment about the budget, and then I'm going to make a compliment to Representative Hawes here in just a second. But, you know, a bunch of us, when we were elected 4 years ago, we came in here with the budget in some pretty tough shape. And there were several reasons for it. Of course, revenue not meeting expectations. But one of the contributing things, I think, was a budget that was largely on autopilot. And we had to disassemble a lot of things and look at almost every line item in the budget. That was a tough thing to do. And a few of us, myself included, campaigned on the notion that we were going to break the 10-year cycle of budget crises that we seem to have fallen in here since the 1980s. We're setting ourselves up, I think, in several areas for another one in 2010, 2012. And it's just a whole bunch of little things like this that go on autopilot. As I'm looking at lines 111, 112, and particularly that's what I'm responding to, and that's where I wanted to say to my friend Representative Hawes, who reminds me very much of my Grandpa Louie, who used to say,
"I always liked Louie."
If this is a good deal today, it'll be a good deal tomorrow. Yeah. And Grandpa Louie died with a lot more money than I'm ever going to see. Yeah, but I want to say that just as a comment to my colleagues around this table, because we have good people who are very passionate about their work sitting up here doing exactly what they're supposed to do, which has asked us to give them some certainty going out into the future so they can do all kinds of swell things to save mankind and put Rochester on the map and other good things, which we're all for, by the way. But their job is to do that. Our job is to ask questions like Representative Hawes just asked and like I hear Representative Bunn asking, what does this then mean? Having said all that, I have a question for Ms. Newman, and that relates to the $15 million that we put up twice in 05 and 06, which we're still in the process, I believe, of spending. What did that legislation look like? Did it look exactly like what we have here this morning in House File 194, or was the language different? Like, was lines 111 and 112 different in that the agency's base wasn't automatically put on autopilot? Oh, by the way, that agency members is DEED. That's whose agency base we're actually expanding, although there is language that ties that expanded base to this project. So, absent the author's amendment yet, just working off of 194 here, what did last year, 2 years legislation ago, look like?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, the appropriation was in the Jobs and Economic Development Omnibus Bill, mm-hmm. and it was a 1 year, each year in 5, 6, and 7, it was a 1 year appropriation. It did not contain the language that it shall become added to the agency's base. It did, however, say that it was available until expended, just for the reasons that if it was appropriated in fiscal 06 mm-hmm. and they didn't spend it at the end of that, they could roll it into 07 and spend.
Mr. Chair.
Now, before you get started, I'd like to welcome to our committee today. We have some 9th and 10th graders here, and I'm sure you'll remember your question in a moment. The Minnesota Connections Academy in Minneapolis are participating in the Voice of the People role that the Minnesota Historical Society brings forth, and welcome to the committee. You're going to get to hear a spirited discussion about where we're going to spend your money. So thank you for coming. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, it's great that they get to hear this. This is actually a policy debate that we're having. Finally, we're getting into some policy and not just money. This is a good deal. Where are we now? Oh, the agency-based thing. You know, if it's a good day to deal today, it's going to be a good deal tomorrow. I'm looking on page 2 of the handout. While you were gone, Mr. Chair, we were trying to figure out the slides and where they were. But if you look at the black and white one we thought we were working from, lower left corner, partnership economic projections. if adequately funded, and I could get into a whole political soliloquy on what does adequately funded, it's related to fairly fund or fully fund, which basically means hold on to your wallet. But anyhow, with the best of intentions, when this was put together a few years ago, the projection was if we adequately funded, and that number was $70 million, considered adequate, here's the impact it would have by 2010. Folks, that's only 3 years away. That's only one more election cycle. Some of us may make it through that next election cycle. And can remember to come back here and hear what our adequate funding, which we're about to do, if we actually hit these projections. If we did, I don't think there's a member among us that would have any problem at all putting more money up there, perhaps even extending the timelines for a little more certainty. But we've got, and we were just offered a couple years ago, targets, benchmarks. This is a good thing. Folks like this. So I guess what I'm arguing for here in a moment is an amendment to this bill to strike the major portions of 111 and 112 and still allow the language to have them roll their money forward if they don't use it, somehow forcing scientists to spend money in a hurry because we might take it back. This strikes me as a profoundly terrible idea. So if we can do that and allow you to roll your money ahead, you spend it in 2, 3, or 10 years, that's fine with us, but I'm just really choking on the agency base having an automatic growth.
Representative, you're looking at the trip unblock. The slide you're looking at, which is the trip unblock
slide, yeah.
Study. Mm-hmm. What they're saying is that was the mid-range scenario, and if we funded up to $300 million by 2010, mm-hmm. we would have 4,000 jobs by 2010. We have funded this particular partnership not quite at $40 million at this particular point, and we're at 2007. So we would be $230 million shy of the appropriate funding that they have benchmarked in this particular slide. And I actually have that study in my office, and you're welcome to come by and take a look at it anytime you would like.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, then apparently I'm misreading the slide, because what I'm reading is that the mid-range scenario includes a statewide impact of up to $300 million annually and up to 4,000 direct and indirect jobs. Am I misreading that?
Yes,
I am? Okay, I'll stand down on that point then until I hear otherwise, although a testifier here may have something to...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, that projection was predicated upon a continuous stream of $50 million a year. So we've already fallen off of that because we didn't have that, and we really are basically, even though the money came last year, we're about a year behind in actually doing anything. So we've only really spent $15 million of that, so we're well behind. Simon Tripp will be there this afternoon if you're able to come to the History Center, and he's going to give an update as to where we are. And the other parts of that, if you get into the details, were predicated on the rest of the economic environment, including the federal environment, and so the NIH environment was not quite as favorable as initially, so we don't have quite as much federal funds to compete for, but it'll open up and we'll be there to compete. But you're correct, that is what we had hoped for if everything lined up, and of course, it hasn't come together because of what we've been able to do in the States. And then what else has happened?
Can I go on to the next one? You're done for a moment?
Yeah, there's other good people here.
Representative Thiessen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just on that last point, I would like some clarification on that, too, because the way I was reading the slide also is that if we invest $70 million, we'll get a $300 million return in these jobs. And I think it's a fair question, and maybe you covered it in some of the slides before I got here about what the return has been, or maybe it's too early at this point to know. But on this issue, though, the it seems to me there's kind of two separate things going on here that have been raised. One is there's a policy decision about ongoing funding versus not, and then there's a separate decision to be made in higher ed, I think, which is about is this the right priority to use this money versus other priorities, and we don't have the information here to make that decision. And it seems to me that there have been actually some pretty good arguments to be made for ongoing funding here from the perspective of, you know, really what we're trying to do. You know, there's talk about we get, you know, we're getting $8 million in more grants. You know, what does that mean in terms of economic return? I don't know. But I think what it does mean, and I think what we need to be focusing on above all, is that what we're trying to do is attract smart people to Minnesota. And that is what's going to lead to spin-offs. And that's what's going to lead to good economic or medical research that is going to not just make money for Minnesota, but also improve the care for the health care for people in Minnesota. So it strikes me that above all, what our goal should be is to try to attract bright minds to Minnesota. That's going to be our future. And it sounds like with this, as well as with the university proposal that we heard last week, Representative Mahoney's bill, this ongoing funding is a really critically important part of that, having that certainty. And obviously, it's only certain to the extent that we're going to have a new legislature in 2 years, but at least someone's going to have to come in and change that. And so from a, I think our policy decision is, does it make sense to put that we fund this on an ongoing basis, or do we do these in smaller increments going forward? And then the finance committee can make the decision about, okay, we understand that is the policy decision that maybe is probably the right policy, but does that fit within our priorities? Is that the way to do it? So it strikes me that maybe the, I suppose what that means is that once Representative Pierre's amendment will be proposed, I'll probably be voting against that amendment. Anyway, that's kind of how I see what our job here is today, and then how and what I would resolve it, how I would resolve it.
Thank you. Representative Norton.
I just want to comment quickly on this. One of the exciting features of this committee is exactly as Representative Thiessen was hitting on. I understand the reservations about ongoing funding and autopilot. I do understand that it's a concern I have as well. I'm fairly fiscally conservative. But I also believe that we have to quit being so short-sighted in our decision-making in the legislature, and it's probably been one of my biggest frustrations watching from the outside for the last 5 years, is, and it has been because of a budget crisis, and I understand that. But we need to be visionary, and this committee is one of the places we can do that. And so I would just ask that you keep that in mind. It does have the feature of the annual report, and I think it is incumbent on this committee as well as Higher Ed and Workforce Development to review those annual reports and make changes as they're needed. That's what we have to do as a legislature. So I don't think the ongoing funding is meant to just say we wash our hands of this. It's meant to provide the security that they need, and then it's up to them to prove it to us, and it's up to us to make sure that they're doing their job.
Representative Powell.
Thank you, Chair Mahoney, and Representative Norton. I've been listening to sort of both sides of the argument here, and I have to say that I consider myself fairly fiscally conservative, and I'm very uncomfortable with the autopilot, but I do understand the concern of the University of Minnesota. So I guess I would ask the author, I'm not going to introduce it myself, perhaps Representative Beardwell or someone else may, of putting some type of sunset language on, which would be sort of a, it would be a little bit... probably not quite what you want, but it'd be a little bit more than I want, more than I'm comfortable with. So I guess I'll maybe throw that out right now before I make any sort of amendment, because that way we give the university, I don't know, 4-5 years ongoing funding, and then at that point I think we'd have some time to sort of reevaluate and see where the university's at. So they would have a little bit of security, and we would have a little bit of security knowing that we're just not on autopilot.
Representative Kevin, if I haven't heard an amendment yet,
no.
And maybe there will be none forthcoming, but 2 years isn't enough funding. So as you think about this, whether you want to offer an amendment, it has to be down the road enough to let this be in place and work its way through. So I'm not offering one right now, but I would just offer that thought.
Representative Reed?
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up on that point. I mean, I don't know if there would be some response from the other testifiers just on that, but whether there is a time horizon that would make sense. I don't know if there's...
Representative Thiessen, unless someone puts the amendment out there, I don't know that we really need to have the discussion about it. If we do put that amendment out, we'd certainly talk about it at that particular point. Representative Ruth?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just got handed. I have a quick question, then I have a comment. Of the $30 million that was already appropriated, how much of that has been used, or what's on hand at the moment?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Ruth. The first $15 million is fully committed, and those projects have been underway for the last year. And the most recent $15 million, as I said, we are going to announce those awards within the week or two. And we need to just do some final work on that. So that and that money will be released right away.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Chair, I just members, I would just really encourage you to vote for the bill as it is, and to be able to pass it on. And as Representative Thiessen said, we need to be able to attract good scientists to Minnesota. This, what we're looking, we're positioning ourselves as a leader in biotechnology, medical genomics. We're not looking only to put Rochester on the map. We're looking to put Minnesota on the map. We're in a race. We're in a race. When you look at all the different states around the United States trying to get this and trying to get through right now. So, please, I'm really encouraging you to support this. And we're looking at development of businesses and jobs in Minnesota. That's the goal.
Representative Haas?
Thank you very much. Go ahead. So if I'm reading you correct, of the $30 million, it's all committed or soon to be committed. Is that correct? There isn't any of that money?
Correct.
Correct. Thank you. I, too, was thinking that a sunset would be good. And, you know, go out like 4 years on a sunset. And we know when that sunset is, you can come back before the sun sets and ask again, and there doesn't have to be a delay. And Uncle Louie was pretty wise, I think. But, I mean, I'm comfortable also moving this on because I realize the benefit of it, but I don't know the future finances and know if it can hold the priority that we give it today 4 years from now. And I know it comes back in one way or the other, but with a sunset in 4 years, it would come back and you can say, or come back in 3 years and ask to expand the sunset. You have the same situation. You just stop and give another time to evaluate on a $15 million budget that's moving forward and forward. Because if that is wrong and it's hard to do, where does it get the money from? And so I think going out 4 years with $15 million, coming back at 3 years and asking again should be a pretty logical compromise.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I have a question that I think may be addressed either by you or by Representative Beard, and it has to do with kind of custom and use in your practice and these types of grants and legislation. And that is, why do we not include specific benchmarks or trends that we need to see on an annual basis in order to identify whether we're meeting the targets that we're looking for? If you sunset it or if you have to come back every 2 years, you're reconsidering the whole policy from scratch again. And I think that is an unnecessary way to spend our time. Whereas if you build in particular benchmarks of accomplishment that are supposed to be reached, into the legislation, we can come back and compare how we're doing and then maybe either cut back or increase or fine-tune in some way what we're doing. And it seems to me that's the better practice. But I don't know if that's frowned upon or if that's a good idea or a new idea around here.
I guess I'll take a stab at it. I think we've never been able to agree on what constitutes an appropriate benchmark, and we've all kind of disagreed to disagree. So I have rarely seen a benchmark put out there. So I and as to why and the ability to figure that all out, because Representative Beard's benchmark might be entirely different than mine, and we could spend hours and hours talking about it. So I've never seen ones put in at work.
If I may, I'm just thinking of the separation of power and how much fun we all have beating up on the executive branch, because we expect them to actually perform. So we set the broad policy here and appropriate the money to the agency that's listed there in line 112. And if we're not happy with the agency's performance, it sort of gives us a common, I won't say enemy, but focal point for somebody to sit in that hot seat up there that we can all ask the hard questions to. I'm just trying to imagine behind you on that shelf, there's a list of all the session laws that you and I and veterans here did just over the last 2 years. If we started putting benchmarks for every agency and every piece of legislation we passed in those blue books,
we'd have built another shelf.
We'd have to build a whole other room just to hold them, I imagine. So it's a great question, but I would encourage us to remember that we're policymakers, not micromanagers. We hire good people to sit up there and tell us why they didn't hit the $300 million in new revenue or the 4,000 jobs or why they exceeded it. And then it's up to us to pass our best judgment call on whether proceeding with that line of funding and work is in the best interest of the state or not. And that's a large part of what this whole discussion is about.
Members, we have two other testifiers here, and we have two other questioners. So I am going to stop in 5 minutes with the questions and allow the testifiers to come down and speak. And then if there's any time left, we'll go back to questions. But I will... Mason?
Okay, I just...
Representative.
When this started, I guess maybe I'm putting too much emphasis on the $70 million. But the way I read this bill originally is we were committed to paying $15 million a year up until the $70 million. And everything since then says that's not the case. So I have a serious concern about the ongoing. I understand the need for what they're doing to have this, and my guess is I would probably always support it, but if the original intent was to do the $70 million to get them the startup, that to me should be somewhere within the parameters of what we're doing. Am I correct? What am I missing here?
I could read the sentence here, Representative Mahoney. Representative Mason, it says the scenario when this impact study was done, the wording is each scenario assumes that the state of Minnesota commits an initial $70 million of funding to the partnership. So perhaps I've been wrong in using the $70 million too often as well. But that was the impact study. That was the initial, an initial contribution. I don't think it was ever meant to be the whole amount.
And that answer your question?
Yes and no. That means I have to remember $70 million 2 years down the road, right? or just the fact that...
No, the $70 million is an arbitrary number that the governor committed to, and he's trying to get to that with his budget proposal at this particular point. And then after that, as the legislature, we can put a bill in. It could have been as low as $15 million a year or $150 million a year, and then we appropriate the people's money, so to speak.
Yeah.
Representative Beeson.
You know, I'll pass. What I was going to say is we do put some benchmarking in, like we require certain jobs of a certain wage be met with certain grants. So there are things that we do, but I think it's not a bad question, maybe worth exploring further. Mm-hmm. As we go forward, but I don't know what those would be today. So
yeah, I think there's. I know we had a about an hour and a half argument in jobs finance last year about the $13 an hour jobs for the deed was supposed to create, and I don't think they've ever met that particular benchmark in the rural areas. Representative Burns.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think to get to the $70 million that the governor's proposing, we'd have to appropriate in the next 2 years a total of 38. That's what I understand from his budget. So, and I could live with that. I could live with the next 2 years a total of 38, and then sunset after four. Is the money planned? Do you have enough projects that are going to take care of the $70 million, and you're expecting $70 million total?
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative, first of all, the governor added in the $2 million, which was not originally part of the $70 million, but, you know, it is an arbitrary number. Let me first say that, okay? I mean, it's a number that given our shortfall in the budget several years ago when we proposed it, we could all kind of even talk about it. I mean, if I would have come here with $100 million a year, I wouldn't have been allowed to testify. Whereas what we really should be doing is investing a lot more than $15 million, okay? The simple answer to your question is every time we've had a request for proposals, we've had 2 to 3 times the number of highly qualified scientific proposals that we could have funded. So we're funding only the best ones, which is great, because it's a great investment for the state, and we're sure that we're getting a lot out of that. But there's a lot more that we could do. And again, this new idea of recruiting faculty, they're going to have longevity here, which won't give us the short-term benchmark. So if you know, that's one job and all their technicians, but what they do over 5 years to the institutions and to the strengths of the institutions is going to be something that 10 years from now, people are going to look back and say, oh, wow, the state really did something for Minnesota. That was a really bright thing to do. But if you ask me to come back in a year and show that the people who we just asked to come here next year have already done something, I'll have a hard time meeting that benchmark. But that would be the best investment for our dollars. So we have to have a long-range view, and we could certainly do that with $20 million a year or $30 million a year.
Okay. Well, I actually said that I was going to cut that off, so if it's, unless it's a very short question and a very short answer, I'm going to give the last few minutes to the Mr. Griffin and Mr. Rapondo.
It is short.
Okay.
It's just the $15 million issue, that's your whole budget, right? This isn't like a quarter of your operating budget.
No.
The $15 million would be your entire budget.
That is the budget.
It is, except for the additional funds that we get, for example, the $5 million from Medica,
okay,
which we've already committed to spending.
Okay.
Thank you. And if I could call down Mr. Griffin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, my name is Phil Griffin. It's nice to be back in front of the committee again. I was going to ask Ms. Sandvik, who's my partner, who's here today and not in the Education Committee, to join me, but she set me up with her computer. And I just want to read you a quick line that comes from the Star Tribune article a week ago. In the first 5 years of this decade, Minnesota added 50,000 healthcare jobs to the state economy, growing a total of 370,000. According to an analysis produced by the Star Tribune for state labor economists, by state labor economists. That's at a time when Minnesota's total job growth grew by 30,000. Mr. Chairman and members, this is the economic engine that is driving the state of Minnesota. And to invest in this is absolutely essential for us to compete. And I think the questions that are being discussed here are absolutely appropriate and imperative that we look at them. Mm-hmm. But to get that long-term funding in place, remember that we are competing against other states that have made massive appropriations. If we don't put that money out front in a solid way that moves forward to the future, we won't be able to bring in, to recruit the scientists that we really need. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm here in favor of the legislation. I could go into more detail, but I just want to say that ongoing appropriation to send that message is really essential. If we don't want to do it this way, there are other tools that can be used, and they've been used in California, which is a massive bonding bill, or they've been used in Wisconsin, which is a $400 million appropriation, and we can do it that way. But I certainly don't think this gives away the legislature's authority to review the budget, which will be coming back in front of you so you can review that base every year as you move along. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I know that time is precious. If there are questions, we'd be happy to answer them. On behalf of Life Science Alley, which is my client here, which I should have stated at the beginning, we are very much in favor of the bill and look forward to working with you, the members of the committee, and Representative Gordon as this legislation moves through. If there are questions, members, I would be happy to take them at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Rapondo?
Rapondo.
Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hey, my name is Rick Rotundo. I'm a CEO of a small pharmaceutical engineering company, and I've been familiar with a lot of the policies that have been generated over the years here in the state of Minnesota. We started a business development program many, many years ago. In fact, I worked closely with Arne Carlson, Governor Klee. Governor Klee has a brother at the University of Minnesota. Some of you might know that he's a brilliant scientist and a leader in the field of cystic fibrosis. One of the programs that we had been advocating for a long time really strikes a stark counterbalance to this proposed legislation. I'm all in favor of some of the questions that have been raised, and I wanted to thank Representative Bunn for her brilliant questions. I was beginning to get a little worried that somebody wasn't going to ask some of the real questions that need to be asked about this particular legislation. Some of the questions that were raised or put forward by the two doctors was, where does Minnesota want to go? All right, well, my question is, how much better would it be if we were to spend our money wisely? And then we heard that in terms of the return on the investment, that we received a $5 million pledge, a $12 million grant, and some federal money from for research in Alzheimer's disease. Gosh, you know, I've heard that for years. One of the points I'd like to point out about state of Minnesota receiving federal money as a justification for return on investment seems a little bit like if my son were to lend me $5 and I pay him back with $5 I took from my wife's purse. I mean, it's government money. I mean, what kind of a return on the investment is that? Meanwhile, there's some serious projects that I'd like to introduce, one of which is, I think, a solution to this problem. I want to get this committee thinking more about return on investment and getting things done and creating the jobs that Minnesota needs. And real shortly, the solution, if you want to get people to stay in Minnesota and have high-tech jobs, rather than paying the average $200,000 a year to have somebody from Harvard come here and do nothing. Look, I got 31 years experience. I know what these people do. What have they accomplished in the last 31 years that I've been around in this business? I mean, seriously. If you want to create jobs with your money wisely spent, then put that money into scholarships. We don't have a pharmaceutical. Do you know that Minnesota is one of the few states that doesn't have a pharmaceutical engineering program? Got a pen here from the University of Alberta in Edmonton. They have one of the finest. I just happen to have that. They have one of the finest pharmaceutical engineering programs out there. Pharmaceutical engineers are really the ones that get down to the practicality of building an actual product, okay, rather than running around doing pure research that a lot of times doesn't create the kind of jobs that we'd like to see here developed in Minnesota. So if you want to see jobs created, give our children, our citizens of Minnesota, scholarship and say, I'll tell you what, you want to become a nurse, you got good grades, we have a nursing shortage. You want to become a pharmaceutical engineer? You want to be a biochemist, a mechanical, or I mean, medicinal chemist? Fine. We'll pay for it. You got good grades in high school. We'll pay for it as long as you get good grades. You graduate. You stay here for 5, 10, 15 years. You don't have to pay us back. You take that degree and you go off to California. You got to pay us back. How's that for creating jobs in Minnesota? And one last thing that I'd like to wrap it up. It's actually two very, very important points. You're proposing to spend $70 billion, and I heard, for example, research in Alzheimer's disease. As the author of two patents that have long since expired, I know exactly what causes Alzheimer's disease. I work very closely with the University of Minnesota on the development of those patents. Alzheimer's disease can be prevented, coming up with genetic markers in order to detect the hypoxic induction of, the ischemic loss of integrity for the neuronal membranes is kind of a strange project. Genetic research in obesity, I don't know, I might suggest eating less. And for prostate cancer, genetic research, one of the finest cancer markers out there that you can't get better is the change in the PSA level over time. It'll be cross-specific to any kind of genetic makeup because people with genetic makeups have different PSA levels. Boom, you got a solution for that. Now, in closing, what I'd like to advocate is the state of Minnesota consider something like, for example, we are developing a program at the University of Minnesota coming out of R&D and actually initiating, I have a meeting here at the end of this week with the University of Minnesota. We'd like to get a clinical study going for the treatment of lung cancer. Now, this is an incredibly viable option, and I'd like the legislature to start looking towards the viable option. And I'd like the legislature to start looking towards these types of projects that walk out of Minnesota. And in summary and in brief, this project, for example, could address up to, in 5 years or less, 3 to 5 years, 20,000 people in the upper Midwest that have lung cancer. This is a viable treatment, It's coming into a clinical setting. It appears to be the most viable treatment for lung cancer. It could be the most promising breakthrough in a $1 billion market. Now, if we divide that among 8 to 10 nonprofit, or I should say university-based hospitals, we have a way to, for those, and the University of Minnesota being one of them, to address that revenue that right now is being wasted on surgery or pharmaceuticals that are not doing the job. We all know that lung cancer, despite what many of us have heard, does not always have the most promising outcomes. Okay, the actual overall survival rate for lung cancer in total is 19%. So that's the kind of project that I'd like to see there. If you were ever to go to the clinical studies facility, I beg all of you to go to the clinical studies facility at the University of Minnesota and take a walk through and ask yourself, if this was my last 3 months of my life, would I like to walk through these dungy halls? Would I like to have, you know, an elevator you don't know if it's going to work or not? What kind of confidence that gives to a person who says, hey, my life's on the line, I'm getting an experimental drug, I hope the elevator works. So this is where our money really needs to be going, towards clinical studies, getting products out to the market, and generating the kind of revenue through so that the university can participate in the kind of things that will allow them to lower the tuition or provide the scholarships or lower the property tax or lower the income tax, rather than giving money to, with all due respect to Mayo Clinic and the University of Minnesota, I have not seen in all my years anything that has come out with any of these genomic projects or whatever that has resulted in anything commercially viable.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Martin, I'm going to ask that you withdraw your amendment so that we get an opportunity to vote on this today.
Mm-hmm. Mahoney, I would, in fact, like to, I don't know that my amendment was second, maybe it doesn't need it here.
Doesn't need one.
Okay, I would like to remove my amendment, and I would like to move the original language, and again, I would like to move it to Higher Ed and Workforce Development Policy and Finance.
Thank you. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This has been a great discussion because I think everyone around this table is enthusiastic about this adventure and the partnership with the Mayo and the U. However, because I'm so jealous of legislative oversight, I'd like to offer the following amendment to the bill, and I'd speak to the amendment after Ms. Newman reads it, if I may.
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment would be on line 1.12 after the word base, insert through the fiscal biennium ending June 30th, 2011, period, and then on lines 1.12, strike and shall, and insert this appropriation is available until expended.
Could I, Representative Mahoney, could I ask that that be repeated? I'm sorry.
Ms. Newman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Norton, on line 1.12, after the word base, insert through the fiscal biennium ending June 30th, 2011, period. You would strike the words and shall on line 1.12 and insert this appropriation is.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Beard.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members, I think that the being available until expended is something that we probably all agree upon around this table. The concern I've heard that we have to have enough lead time, and I've heard this argument before, I'm sure we'll hear it again, that we can actually do recruiting or it doesn't become an impediment to recruiting. It's one that I want to recognize that there's some validity there. And if we put this out there through 11, I think that's the next two legislatures that pretty much don't have to go through this entire policy debate, although I'm willing to bet they will anyhow. But 2011 is going to be right in the middle of when we're looking at the next potential budget crunch. I think it's a good time to actually force the legislature to revisit every issue in the budget. And so I think there's wisdom to this, and it's a good balance of the concerns I've heard around this table this morning. By the way, excellent job on chairing a great committee this morning, in my humble opinion, Mr. Chairman. And so I'd like to ask for your support for the amendment. How am I doing?
I'm sure it was a great 10 minutes. Representative Reed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's good. I would like to hear from the testifier how that would affect 2011. How does that affect when we're trying to get scientists and we're trying to look ahead for the focus of the dollars that we have available to us?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ruth, 4 years is a lot better than two. It's still a relatively short time frame. Our recruitment packages, we're looking at five-year recruitment, and things are so competitive that people look at us and say, what is really the commitment to the state? So I am concerned about what that means. That, you know, yes, it's better that I don't have to come back next year, but it's not quite long enough. On the other hand, we're very grateful for the support that we get, we'll work with you with whatever you can see as possible to do. I would prefer 5 or 6 years would be a little more to the time frame we'd be thinking of, but again, it's a lot better than what we've had in the past.
Members, was there someone else? Representative Thiessen?
Well, I don't know. I would speak against the amendment.
That's what I was going to do.
Okay, but on two grounds. I mean, one is a more technical thing. In terms of this budget crunch that's coming, I mean, if we're setting a policy that we think is important that we invest in biosciences, what you're setting up by this amendment is saying if we do see this budget crunch is that this money disappears. It won't be on the table with all those other priorities, so we won't see it. And I think it ought to be there, and if there's a budget crunch and higher ed or whoever is going to do this at that time, then can make the priorities, but at least it'll be part of the mix. So I think actually from a technical perspective, we're hurting ourselves by doing this in that scenario. And the second thing is I think what we're about in this committee is setting the policy going forward. And we're saying we are going to make a commitment, a long-term commitment in Minnesota. That's the decision of this policy committee toward these types of projects. Let the finance committee sort through those priorities, but we think this is a really important priority. And so kind of from a larger view perspective and from a technical, strategic, tactical, budgetary perspective, I think it's, I would speak against the amendment.
I'm going to call on Ruth, and then I'm going to speak, and then we're going to vote on this amendment, and then we're going to vote on the bill. Representative Ruth.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think I had my hand up, but I'm happy to speak in what I would suggest.
Well, you should, because we're over already.
Because in support of the bill, then I would ask the author's amendment if they'd be willing to put that out at least 5 years, which would then be 2012, are you looking, or 13? What would be I guess I would ask.
And still have the chairman's not supporting the amendment at all.
Yeah, I would instead of it.
That would be.
Be willing to move that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if it's a good amendment here, it'll be a good amendment in the Jobs Committee. If it fails here, perhaps the next person in the Jobs Committee could make it 2013 or something like that. But this is a great discussion because I'm seeing the difference between my lawyer friend and an entrepreneurial business guy who thinks this is a wonderful idea. There's good things going on here, but 2 years from now is not today. And if my idea for business today isn't something else is more pressing or more prominent in 2 years, 4 years, whatever, I'm okay with that, and I think the entrepreneurial urges of the people in this state will adjust. And it's a good thing for anybody to come back here and go through the discipline of explaining themselves, as Uncle Bill used to say. That's never a bad thing. And so, again, we've just got a little difference in style. A lawyer likes things buttoned down and don't have to worry about it tomorrow. A business guy is fast on his feet and doesn't mind one bit having to come back and explain himself and resell his idea because we do it every day.
And just
no, I'm going to speak and then we're going to vote on this. And I'm going to tell this committee.
That was a mischaracterization.
I understand that.
Thank you.
I understood that. I'm going to speak to this committee as a vision that I have for this committee. For the last 20 years, this state has focused down on what is doable today. This state has started to have a small vision. My hope for this committee is that we have a larger vision, that we look out as men and women that ran the state in the 50s and the 60s. They said, our vision can be huge, and we built Honeywell, we built IBM, we built 3M, and we're seeing all those companies shrink, just like our vision. It is time, members, that we vote down this amendment. We make this ongoing funding on a regular basis into the future. This state should be investing millions in this and we should be investing in getting the University of Minnesota at Rochester to hold an entrepreneurial class every year, every quarter, every semester to get these businesses started. So with that, members, all in favor of Representative Beer's amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? No. The amendment fails. Members, without further ado, I would ask for a vote on this particular amendment on this bill. All in favor of this amendment, this bill passing the move to higher ed finance, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Thank you, Representative Norton.
Thank you,
members. And with that, the committee is adjourned.